You know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Talk about punk!
What's up, posers?
Oh, what's up?
Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod, the game where no one wins. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And today we are joined by another special guest. So why don't you tell everyone who you are and what we may know you from?
Sure. I am Paul DiCiccio. I run a record label called Tor Johnson Records. I've also played in a bunch of bands, including Best Practices, Jesus Centric, Alpha Owl, currently a band called Sidorak, and I book shows in Providence, Rhode Island.
I had no idea you were in Best Practices. I really liked that band.
Oh, good. Awesome. Yeah, I was the drummer.
Cool. Oh, nice. I actually wrote down here, because I was looking at your discography to see which records you'd put out that I particularly liked, and the Best Practices Sore Subjects EP is one I wrote down. And I also threw in the Sea of Storms Dead Weight album and the Weak Teeth, What a Plague You Are. Those are some of my favorite records you've put out. So,
oh, thank you.
I've been aware of Tor Johnson for a while. I think I even have a button.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Do you ever go to Fest?
Well, Best Practices played twice.
Okay, right. So I probably picked up a pin at Fest, more than likely. And then
it wound up in a I don't know, that. Yeah, it could have wound up in a box of records that were shipped to you or something, you know.
That's possible.
I've done trades with Grant, who you had on with Bitter Melody, you know, Late Bloomer from North Carolina and Self-Aware. Like, I've worked with them.
You know what, now that I think about it, I remember getting your pin around the same time as I got a Self-Aware pin. So that's maybe where I picked it up then.
There we go.
Could have been at Lunchbox.
Also possible.
Yeah. Yeah, so... And then I saw that you commented on the Instagram page for when Grant was on, and I was like, and then you posted about going through and listening to all the episodes, and I was like, we should reward people who listen to every episode of this terrible podcast.
So I'm a nerd when it comes to podcasts, and even though the format, you don't need to listen to them from the beginning, I always listen to podcasts from the beginning. I don't know why. It's like, I just feel like I have to do it. It's just the way my brain works.
You know, I do the same thing. Like, if I can, I'll go all the way back to the beginning. Sometimes, if I can't, if it's one of those shows that puts old ones behind a paywall, I may not ever start listening to it, just because I can't listen to those early ones.
Also true. The same.
It's like, I want to know all the in jokes, you know?
Yeah. Right, like, I want to be a part of it. I want to, like, start from the beginning, like I was there.
So let that be a little tip for all our listeners out there. If you listen to every episode, you could be a guest too.
But then they also need to tweet at you guys, like, facts you missed and things like that.
Yeah, you sent us, what was it, The Ordinary Lives? Was that the name of the band?
Oh, yeah. So Jeff Cunningham from Bridge and Tunnel was in a band that I put out a record for. And he didn't get that nod, though. Like, you know, none of your listeners would know or be able to buy a 7-inch.
What did you think of our opinion on that album?
You know, I personally like that band the most out of the ex-Latterman bands, but it's because they sound the least like Latterman.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're not really taking as much from that into their sound.
Yeah.
You know, but also, like, the member is a drummer. And, like,
true,
you know, you're not going to listen to the drumming and be like, wow, this is the Latterman guy.
Yeah.
The fills are so reminiscent of Latterman.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, because this is why I'm really happy we've started having guests on, because we are sometimes negative on an album that people will love, and then I feel bad about being negative about it, but it's entirely opinion-based. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
I mean, we've shit on some bands, you know, like The Main, or sure. Who else did we hate? Flipper.
One bad pig.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we rightfully shit on the ones that we, like, really go hard on, but it's hard when it's just an album that you're only okay with, or, like, you don't love it, but, you know.
You don't hate it either. That's
the thing with the Bridge and Tunnel one is, like, I don't feel like you guys were shitting on that record.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just didn't like it that much.
We did one on Save Ends.
And oh, yes. Which is kind of funny because they're also friends of mine.
We described that one as a good album to have, a pleasant album to have on in the background.
Yeah.
And then they listened to it and... tweeted at us and called us a pleasant podcast to have on in the background. I think that's fair.
Fair.
Don't dish it out if you can't take it, I guess. But,
yeah,
exactly.
My only problem is when people completely misunderstand the point of the show, and then
really, like, it's an opinion podcast. It's not like all of the facts about a record.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, I guess we can get into format here. And we, for this episode, drew the year 2014. And as usual, we like to look at the Rate Your Music charts for that year and to check out some of the bigger trends. And number one on the list this for 2014 is The Hotelier, Home Like No Place Is There. And I feel like that's a pretty big indicator of what the trends were in 2014.
You know, I mean, like, Tiny Engines was a pretty hype label at that time, you know? You had this record, you had the Dikembe record, you had the Somos record, so many others, and it's just telling that that's, like, right at the top.
Yeah, because if you look on this page, I'm trying to see if there are any other of the emo-type bands in there, on here.
Joyce Man, Gates...
There's a Pianos Become the Teeth album.
La Dispute.
Prawn. Kingfisher. Free Throw. Those days are gone. So,
you know, it's funny looking at this. Like, all of the records that I personally, like, listen to a lot are not at all that genre. It's kind of funny. Like, that United Nations record is awesome. The Full of Hell Merzbow split is insane. The, like, Have a Nice Life record is way better than I expected to be at the time. Like, all of these bands, that single Mother's record, like, came out of nowhere. It had been, like, 3 or 4 years since their last record.
Like, I remember, wasn't there, like, an EP before that album, that single Mother's album? And that's, like, kind of where they blew up?
Yeah, it was the one with, it's like a Dreamcatcher on the cover.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah, I was playing in Alpha Owl at the time, and we played with them. And they just instantly, like, blew up, like, a week later, because Death Wish, like, took full U.S. distro of that. It, like, they're a Canadian band, and it was a Canadian label, and they just blew up, and they were awesome.
And I do remember there being, like, a really big gap in between, like, that EP and, like, a full length.
Yeah. That Punch record, too? Like,
yeah. Is that the last Punch?
Yes. Wait, no. There was that EP with the kid jumping off.
Oh.
Was that before or after this? I can't remember now.
I want to say they ended on an EP, but I can't remember for sure.
That's the last album. No, there's no EP after that.
Yeah, nothing less.
Okay.
No, 2011. Yeah. Yeah, that was the last record. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about them a little bit with Super Unison. We talked about them.
Sure.
Let's see. Anything else on this front page worth looking at? I guess we should mention Against Me's Transgender Dysphoria Blues. Yeah. That's kind of an important record for that year.
It is.
It was like a big crossover hit, even. And it was it the first album came out after Large Anne Grace came out as transgender?
Yes.
Yeah, so like there maybe was like a single or an EP before that. But yeah, this was like the first full length they put out.
It's interesting just looking at the top 10, because you have, like, KO Dot, like, I remember when this record came out, no one cared about it.
Yeah.
Everyone cared about the record before this, and, like, that Ice Age record, Like, that's definitely got to be because of the new record that just came out, because no one really cared about that when it came out either.
No.
Yeah, we've noticed, for those who haven't listened before, we've noticed that in Rate Your Music, a lot of retroactive scoring can be responsible for why an album is higher on the list. So if a band has like a really hyped record, but nobody had really talked about them before, people will go back and listen to it and start rating those albums. Like, you saw that with that band Idols. Like, they got really huge, and then their other albums retroactively became like higher rated and started rising on lists, even though at the time people weren't listening to them. So Ice Age definitely is one of those bands. Also, it's weird that KO Dot is on here, because they're not a punk band, like, at all, really.
And I mean, honestly, like, the Full of Hell Merzbow split, like, probably shouldn't be on here either. It's an excellent record, but it should be in the metal charts.
Yeah, it's so funny how much metal.
Yeah, anything that's grind related pretty much shows up and under punk and that KO Dot record, I think maybe gothic rock is listed under punk.
Yeah,
That would make sense. I mean, they were very punk in general. Like, I booked them probably a decade ago, and their aesthetic was very punk. I had them in a basement, and then saw them in Boston at like Mass Art in like a hallway.
Did they ever release anything on Robotic Empire?
I think the split with I'm gonna have to like actually look in my record collection right now. they have a split that I'm pretty sure is on Robotic.
Yeah, it looks like...
Oh, Bloody Panda. They're split with Bloody Panda.
There's a 2005 Blabbermouth article called KO Dot Signs the Robotic Empire.
Weird. So, yes.
Featuring former members of the now-defunct Maudlin of the Well. Man, I remember when KO Dot was new.
Yeah.
I remember being on the Demon Hunter message boards. And people on there talking about them a lot. Which is weird, because you wouldn't think that board would be tied into arty, like, post-rock, post-metal.
Well, I mean, that was the thing with them, is they had, like, a violinist, and they all wore cloaks, and it was, like, it was very production theater, like, doomy stuff.
Yeah, I feel like they would fit in very easily on Southern Lord.
Yes, yeah.
I want to pop over to the second page of results here, and right at the top is number 41 is the Menzingers' Rented World. Do we say that right?
I think so. Menzingers?
Menzingers, or sometimes we say Menzingers. I don't know what what's the right way to say it.
Yeah, I've heard it both of those ways. I don't.
That's a huge album. I'm actually surprised that's not on the first page.
I'm surprised it's not up closer to like that Joyce Manor record, honestly.
Yeah, it seems like it was a big album when it came out in 2014, and they've maintained their audience, if not grown it. So
the second page,
man,
is more of what I remember from 2014.
Yeah,
like Chumped.
I love that record, that Chumped record.
There's that Cayetana record.
Oh yeah, that was also Tiny Engines.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's a Modern Baseball record. There's Code Orange.
Lawrence Arms,
Tiger's Jaw.
That Nouns record was a big deal in 2014.
Yeah,
and then even further on the third page, Young Widows, Fucked Up, Restorations, Trap Them, Somos. I remember all of these records like vividly when they came out.
Yeah,
it is Yatia only record.
It is only five years ago.
It's interesting to see these though, not on the front page, because I feel like these are the records that were really popular, like that You Blew It album was talked about a lot.
That Empire record.
Yeah.
Braid's Comeback record.
That Acacia Strain record, man, it ripped so hard.
I feel like this, like, later 2010s, like, into, like, now, punk is such a huge overarching genre that, like, stuff we like recognize as like, oh, I remember this being huge. Like, there's so many other things like that. That Trap Them record, the fucking Invincible record was like huge. And like, I'm not just saying that because they're from Providence. Like, it was a big deal.
No, it was. It was huge. Yeah. I mean,
the last Bane record.
Yeah.
You know, that was like, they then toured the world and their last show was every single show was their last show. And that was like the going joke.
Yeah. Like, going through this list, I see a lot of things that were huge in 2014. Like, that Backtrack record was a big deal. Lost in Life. And that Angel Dust record, AD.
Yeah, Angel Dust is playing Riot Fest, right?
Are they?
Aren't they?
Angel Dust is doing that tour with a veil.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
I'm pretty sure Angel Dust is like from Richmond. They're all they probably know each other. But it's still...
Frameworks record, Loom, is up here. And I wouldn't say they were huge in 2014, but I remember they got a lot of buzz, like with people in the know, like, you know, more underground buzz than some say like that Fireworks album that came out that year.
who put this one out? Top Shelf. Yeah. I mean, at the time, those labels like your Top Shelf, your Run for Cover were putting so much money in PR.
Yeah.
You know, like every record they put out was just hyped beyond belief.
So
I saw something recently from Top Shelf Records. Maybe one of the guys who runs the label had tweeted something about how they pretty much stopped paying other people to do PR, and pretty much how they don't show up anywhere. Like, their albums don't show up in any publications. Like, no one talks about them. Yet their bands are like really successful touring bands. Like,
well,
they have really big followings, and it's an interesting thing.
I guess the question for that is like, you know, what's the last record they put out that you remember? And then not what bands are on the label, but what record you're like, that's a Top Shelf record. For me, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Look, yeah.
The bands probably pay for tour PR, which is a thing that bands do.
Yeah.
Like, we have this big tour coming up. Do press release for it. You know, and so then you see press for tours, but you don't necessarily see as much press for, like, records.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Top Shelf Records discography right, or at least their Bandcamp listing right now, and I'd say the last one I remember seeing, I'm not going to count Rat Boys, because I don't feel like I saw a push from the label. That may have been them being packaged on shows with other bands. I want to say maybe that Del Paxton record was the last one I remember seeing, you know, stuff about online. That's not to say they don't put out good stuff, but they've also put out a lot of, like, Japanese math rock bands, like Trico and Toe and Mouse on the Keys.
Toe, they at least, like, put a bunch behind that.
Yeah,
I do remember that.
Like, I don't know. I remember, so Keith, I think it is, that runs Top Shelf, like, moved to the West Coast, and, like, right around that time, like, I just stopped seeing stuff they were really doing. I don't know if it was like, I don't want to say live in a bubble, but I kind of do, and have, like, probably for the last like 20 years, where it's like, if a band's touring through, I'll check them out. And like, if I like it, I'll buy the record. And if other friends are talking about stuff, but like, or if something looks cool in a record store, you know,
Yeah.
I guess I just don't listen to everything anymore, but also scrolling through their Bandcamp like I am right now. Yeah. Wow. They put out a lot of stuff that I had no idea.
Yeah. Like
That Mock Arms record. I remember when they put that out.
Which one?
Put the Kid on the Sleepy Horse, the new Mock Orange.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That got hype because Mock Orange did a new record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say if you go down, that Dangers record, I feel like, had a push. But I think that may even have, like, a Death Wish push behind it.
Yeah, because like they did something with them, I think, right?
It was like they distroed it, or like they had their own color.
Because I think, isn't Danger one of the guys from Graf Orlok?
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, I want to get your opinion on this. We've talked about how in the last like 2 or 3 years, punk is really weird now. And bands that you would consider like traditionally to be punk aren't really that popular anymore. And bands that you probably wouldn't call punk, maybe more like a new wave inspired thing, or bigger. Like, have you noticed that too? Or
I feel like, I'm a little bit older than you guys. I graduated high school in 2000. So, when I was first introduced to like punk slash like not the popular music, it was like the late 90s. And pretty much you had like four distinct sects in punk. You had punk, which was like street punk, but like involved in that was things like crusty bands and like even the beginnings of like Dropkick Murphys. You had ska, which at the time there was a pretty massive like popular ska scene, but then also like not popular ska scene, let's say that.
Yeah.
You had hardcore, which is pretty self-explanatory, straight edge kids. And then you had indie rock. And indie rock was like, even when I was coming up, like Braid and Hot Water Music were under that like envelope because punk was punk. Punk was mohawks and like, you know, studded vests, and like, you know, punk was like definitely more crust and like more street punk inspired.
Yeah.
But all of it was under the punk umbrella.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So when I view it, it's like, for me, if something is punk, it's not necessarily about the music they're playing.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely that discussion of like, what is, you know, a punk attitude versus, you know, the actual sound, because you can be, they're like Republican punk bands, you know, and it's like that to me is extremely unpunk.
Weirds me out, man.
It's so weird, but it sounds also
like punk, but it's not.
But in terms of like current like trends, I've seen a lot of sort of the home worship stuff.
Yeah,
that's a lot right now. There's surprisingly a huge like sort of D-beat revival going on right now, like Japanese sort of crust inspired stuff.
Yeah,
and like I don't know, it's like a weird time where like there's a lot of like people just sort of experimenting, but then also a lot of people just sort of just going back to basics.
Yeah, I mean, I. If you've listened to a bunch of episodes, then you're probably aware of our theory on when things are bad, music gets more aggressive or like more down tempo, and the way things are right now politically, say what you will about the Obama administration and all the bad things that they did as well. They weren't like doing trans bans and, you know, potentially removing abortion rights.
Exactly.
And so I wonder, this kind of fits in with my theory. I don't know for sure. I mean, it's just a working theory I've been playing with, but I don't know if this reminds me of the early 2000s during the Iraq War, when metalcore, hardcore, like that was like the dominant sound, with the exception of like the Warped Tour pop and emo stuff. But even then that was full of like angst and aggression.
You know, it's weird. Like I talked about how Providence has like I am in a bubble in terms of music. Like I don't necessarily search it out as often. Providence music, for as long as I've been here and before, has sort of a Napoleon complex, where because we're the smallest state and we're a small city in New England, where like so many bands would happily skip over us to play New York and play Boston. Local bands tend to either be faster or harder or weirder, or like, so the entire time I've been here, like metal is dominant here. Hardcore was dominant here. Noise was like huge. Lightning Bolt, like, you know, bands like that. And it's only recently, like probably in the past, like 5 years or so, maybe a little bit before, that bands like more of an indie rock or like more of a fest punk exist here. Like we have like shoegaze bands here now, and like previously, like that was like bands like that wouldn't have shows. You maybe exist in Providence, but you probably don't play here.
Right. You were talking about like hardcore bands being from that area, and then I just remembered Convulsions, or Convul, as they
yes
became
yes.
And we actually booked them for a show here in Hickory once with when they went on that tour with Colony.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I saw either the kickoff or the come home show for that one. Those, so they're probably closer to your age. Yes, I think so.
Probably. I'm 32. So, right. And then Dylan, you're what, 28?
28.
Yeah, so you know, I'm like 5 years older. But at the time that they were starting, they were like either fresh out of or still seniors in high school.
Yeah.
And all of us, like, you know, older kids, Providence is a very older scene because of the cost of living. You don't necessarily need to grow up, I guess. People just stay punks forever. Yeah. So when they started, we were all like blown away because they were basically a disembodied rip. And yeah, we were just like, who is playing this right now? No one. This is like crazy. And like tons of younger kids would come out to their shows and just be like insane. I saw them at a coffee shop at University of Rhode Island. And like the coffee shop had bookcases with like board games.
Mm-hmm.
And during their set, the singer is climbing the bookcase. People are just throwing board games everywhere. And they finish. And super calmly, he goes, hey, if you guys could hang out and help us clean up, that'd be really cool. So we could have shows here later. And I was just like, it was just very funny to me.
That's great, though. Nice. Like, they knew how to have fun, but they were also like, and now we're respectful of our environment.
Right.
Yeah,
that's funny. We booked them to play at a coffee shop where nice. We had an incident with a local band where like the singer like ran across a table and like,
oh no,
it was just kind of this whole like fiasco of like, don't be too crazy. This coffee shop is not really suited to what we're doing, but it's the only spot available for us.
Yeah, so it was definitely one of those things where it's like it was our first show and the guy decides he wants to table walk, and it's like, what? Come on, man. You have nowhere else to play in this town, and you're going to ruin it the first day?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, well, I guess we have kind of talked for a while. We should probably get into the actual albums. So, for this episode, we got number 138, and it is Dikembe and their album Mediumship. Quick little basics out of the way. They're from Gainesville, Florida, which makes sense why they play Fest every single year. This was released on Tiny Engines, as we talked about earlier. And please tell me if I'm right on this. The personnel, I had a hard time like finding exactly who was on this particular album. It is Stephen Gray on guitar and vocals, Ryan Williams on guitar, Randy Reddell on bass, and David Bell on drums.
Right. This was Randy's first record with them.
And I'd seen like they had some like another guitarist at some point.
But so Ryan started with them, and this was Ryan's last record. He ended up, I forget what he does for a career, but he ended up moving to like Hawaii and then like all over the country and had a kid. And so now Andy, who I don't remember his last name, from You Blew It, is okay. Now the band.
Okay. I saw an Andy when I was looking at the band members on like Wikipedia and like Discogs. So, and for some reason that like a lot of albums will have each member listed on the records, but for this record, for some reason it didn't. So I had to kind of piece it together based on EPs before and after. And it's funny how much work actually goes into this podcast, and despite us being wrong very often.
I'm pretty sure Andy actually hasn't been on any records yet.
Okay.
I think Steven just recorded double guitar for Hail Something and Ledge.
That makes sense. And then it was also worth noting that there were guest vocals from Luke Pate from Frameworks. So I thought I would mention that too. Cool. Well, let's go around and just get everybody's like initial thoughts. We'll let our guest go first.
Okay. I mean, for me, I first saw Dikembe in 2012, I think it was. And so for me, this is like a really good sophomore record. It's an interesting evolution of the band, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I tend to listen to this record more, but when I see them live, I like probably want to see older stuff.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, yeah. I'll say I wasn't super familiar with their albums. Like, I think I knew like a song or two, and like I knew their sound, like what they were doing. And then so I listened to this album, and then I listened to the album before, and I was like, ooh, I think I like the album before a little more, because it's a little, I guess, heavier, a little fuzzier, a little more garage-based.
Sure.
And this one felt a lot slicker, like the production value. I feel like this maybe their production-wise, maybe their best record,
which I have a funny story about that later, but yeah,
I guess I'll go ahead and say my thoughts on this album. I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised with it. I had an idea of what kind of band they were just because of what they were lumped in with, and knowing that they're from Gainesville actually makes a lot more sense now that I think about it, because my initial thought was that they sounded like a Philly style emo band from 2014, but they don't. Like, they have a little bit more of an edge to them. They're not purely tapping the entire time. Like, it felt like they were like, I don't know, they've got the Gainesville sound more so than like the Midwest sound, if that makes any sense.
Totally.
What'd you think, Dylan?
This album was not what I expected it to sound like. I'm glad that you said that you consider this an evolution of their sound, because I remember listening to Chicago Bulls a lot. And then I did listen to, I guess, Broad Shoulders was their first full length, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I do remember listening to that when it came out, but it didn't really stick with me. And so then I just kind of never really checked anything else out. And I think as more of their records came out, I was drifting a little away from the Midwest emo kind of thing. Just wasn't as interested in it anymore. So
yeah.
Listening to this record now, it was a surprise what it really sounded like. And I would call it Midwest emo, but it, mm-hmm. Yeah, the Gainesville thing you said, like, that kind of makes me think, that kind of connected some dots for me. Especially in the rhythm section on this record, and between the bass and the drums, like there's a little bit of a Hot Water Music, early Hot Water Music feel to the rhythm that I wasn't conscious of while I was listening to it, but kind of thought of when you said that. But
sort of along those lines, I got this may sound weird, but I got a little bit of a Seaweed vibe. Like they have a little bit of those crunchy guitars, like that punky grunge guitar the Seaweed had, and even vocally I thought Steven's voice kind of sounded like lead singer Seaweed. Especially the song was Gets Harder, which I think is probably my favorite song on the album. But yeah, that would make sense with the Hot Water Music idea being in there.
I preferred kind of the more upbeat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Pelican Fly and 24 Carats were songs that really stood out to me. It's not my favorite overall. I wouldn't say it's bad. It's maybe just a little bit outside of my preferences.
Yeah.
For me, like, Broad Shoulders and Chicago Bulls, I feel like, while having a little bit of a different sound, are sort of in the same, like, can be lumped together. Mm-hmm. Like, song-wise, like, Broad Shoulders definitely has slightly more interesting song structure, I guess, than Chicago Bulls. But, like, this is, like, I don't want to go so far as to say they're Pinkerton. But, like, it's just interesting listening to this one, and, like, you can hear a band that, like, is drawing from more influences. I also know that, like, at the time that they were doing, like, Chicago Bulls, they, while in Gainesville, they weren't necessarily, like, a Gainesville band, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Where by the time this came out, like, you know, Randy works for Fest, and, like, they're all, like, deeply involved in, like, what goes on in that city. And I feel like you can sort of almost, like you guys were saying, hear more of the sound of stuff that comes out of there in this record.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't say it's like, yeah, it's like the Gainesville sound. It's not the No Idea record sound.
Yes, no, right.
But it does have, like, the Gainesville vibe, I guess. It's a weird distinction, but I feel like it's there. And I do think where you come from can play a factor into your overall sound as a band.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah, even without just being conscious of it, or, right, you know, intentionally trying to sound like,
like, we all know what the Philly emo sound sounds like. Like, it's a lot of tapping, but then they all morphed into, like, a garagey vibe, or fuzzy vibe. But then you go, like, with more Midwest, and it almost went slower. Like, they slowed down all their songs before they shifted into the hum worship type stuff. So, like, every area has its own sound. It's just, it's funny, you don't think of Gainesville as for its emo sound specifically.
You know, it's interesting that, like, you know, this band sort of got lumped into, like, the Philly sound and the Midwest sound, where I feel like at the time, the bands that Tiny Engines were putting out were, like, sort of fringe emo indie bands. Wow, my cat has decided to play with his toy. I apologize if you guys can hear that.
That's fine. We have cats, too. So.
But, like, at the time, you know, that Somos record is, like, basically a record that could be on the radio. The Run Forever record, like, had tons, which was, you know, same general couple years, had, like, that folk sound. Even our record, the Best Practices record, you know, it was ridiculously sped up for the type of music it was. You know?
Yeah, I always got more of just, like, an indie rock vibe off that, which, so we were talking about punk and indie rock being under the same umbrella, but, like, it was a little faster, it was a little fuzzier, a little more, you know, it wasn't quite as much clean tones as a lot of the other bands at the same time.
And so I like listening to this record, like in comparison to the stuff earlier, it's like the song crafting, it's like they're trying to like bring in other elements, was what I got. You know, like the drumming is still insane. Like David's drumming is, he should be in like faster, like grindy bands, like Duffy does, you know? And then you mix that with like the tapping and like the looped line sort of stuff. It was just made for an interesting record.
Yeah, looking at the Tiny Engines albums that came out around this time, I kind of forgot they were always a little more fringe than, say, Top Shelf or Run for Cover. Because, like, they put out that Springtime record, and, like...
Yeah, I actually pitched putting that record out to Springtime, and Tiny Engines scooped them up.
I mean, I love that EP, and I saw those guys a couple times live, and Grant put out Roger's other band, Family Cat.
Yes,
So, like, I love that whole, like, Richmond, like, family scene that's, like, all these guys played in bands together, and they all have, like, five bands together each, and I love all those groups. You know, with this album, I didn't expect it to be as dark as it was. Like,
yeah,
it was like moodier and a little more down tempo than I anticipated, which when I listened to the album before, I thought that was a little more upbeat, a little more energetic. So it is interesting to see a band, like, you know, try and evolve their sound a little bit from album to album.
And I mean, I'm not, you can edit this out, but conversely, REP. Anyway.
yeah. I could, yeah. Ooh, we can get into that a little bit. Oh, man, I can't wait to see what you're going to say about that EP. So, looking at 2014 emo and listening to this album, I felt the grunge elements a little more here. Mm. And, do you remember when all the emo bands decided they were going to start playing grunge?
I do. This one was kind of early compared to everyone else.
That's what that was my thinking. I was like, I feel like that was like maybe a year or two later. Because like, when did that Daylight record come out?
Oh God, yeah, that was like that was the one.
That was the one that made everybody go, "Oh wait, we can do this now."
Yeah.
So we're just doing Nirvana again? Cool.
But I thought there were some riffs on here that I was like, "That's a little Nirvana here," like. It was kind of neat, like, to hear it earlier than what everybody else was doing.
Yeah, and, like, but then still having more of the vibe of their older stuff and not just straight, like, oh, we can just be a grunge band now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. They didn't go full into that sound like a lot of other bands in that time period did. And then they turned into hum bands. And
right. You know, it's interesting. You had mentioned before how this is probably like the slickest sounding record they've done.
Yeah.
And so I was talking to Randy from the band about like any little tidbits on the record. And this is the only one that was recorded in a real studio.
Mm.
They recorded all of their other recordings in their drummer's house. And they were all set up to record in his house for this record. And it hit up a friend of theirs that was moving studios just to borrow some microphones. And he was like, oh, if you want, it's empty, so you can just come in and record.
You know,
so, budget, no money.
That makes so much sense, because, like, I did. I listened to the album before, and I listened to the EP after, and I was like, huh, this one sounds like maybe the label gave him some money. Like,
But no, they just had friends.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, it definitely feels bigger. Like, it feels like there's more behind it. But to be honest, I kind of like the more raw sound of the album before and the EP after. Like, I like that a little more. That's just my personal taste, though. What do they think of this record? Are they...
You know, they all really like the sound on this record. They think it's the best sounding record.
Mm-hmm.
But song-wise, like, these are some of the first songs that they all sort of collectively wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Where all the records prior, like, people would come in with songs, or which... You guys have both been in bands. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know how that works. You know, you show up to a practice with a song ready to go, or you show up to a practice with a riff and everyone writes the song.
Yeah.
You know, it's like two different ways of doing things.
Or in my case, the guitar player tells me what to play.
So yeah, they were saying that this was like one of the first ones that like there was no real like this is this person's song. They were all sort of Dikembe songs. That makes sense.
Yeah. I was looking, like, 2014 looks like it was kind of a busy year for them because they did that split with the Jazz Jr. that year, and they even were part of that Christmas split, four-way split.
Oh, right.
You Blew It, Have Mercy, and Kitty Hawk. So I was like, okay, these four bands together.
Yeah.
Dikembe, You Blew It, Have Mercy, and Kitty Hawk. That, to me, is like, that's 2014. Like,
pretty much.
That is so specific to a very certain era of emo and punk.
Also, yeah, it's a funny little tidbit. Apparently, every track listing comes from lyrics taken from a female rapper.
I saw an article that mentioned that. Like, they had some song titles. It was like some Pitchfork article. And the first paragraph of that entire article was them talking about Dikembe Mutombo. And I was like, what? Okay. You can just tell us. You don't have to tell us about Dikembe Mutombo. You can just say they got their name from that, and then from him, and then, get on with it. But I think that article did specifically mention a couple songs, but it shows you that they didn't even know that they were all from female hip hop songs. That's pretty funny.
I thought that was kind of amusing.
Yeah. You know, Dikembe are always a band that I've seen on the fest schedule, and I'm always like, I might see them, and I throw them on my calendar. And then usually it comes down to a conflict in scheduling, or I'm like, oh, I've been watching bands for 4 hours now. I want to go sit down for a while.
Yeah. I'm going to go sit in a parking lot and eat pizza.
I mean, having like played with them a bunch, booked them a bunch, this year, if you go to Fest, make sure you see them. They're worth seeing once. Let's say that, especially at Fest, because like at Fest they generally play at least one, if not all four, Chicago Bulls songs. Kids go absolutely insane. It's like it's as if you're watching like AC/DC. Like the amount of kids singing along, it's like ridiculous.
I have actually seen Dikembe. I want to say it was probably around 2012. I saw them in Asheville, and
You Blew It.
I want to say probably with You Blew It.
Yeah, that was the first time Best Practices played with them was that tour. It was You Blew It, them, Dads, and then a local band.
Did you play in Nashville?
We didn't. No, we just played the local. Where did we? We never played North Carolina. No.
Yeah, I just can't remember who else played that show. And I don't even know if I stayed after Dikembe played. I think I might have just watched like the openers and then Dikembe left.
Do you think Muscle and Bone played that show?
Maybe.
Would that be too early?
I joke that show is the reason why Best Practices ended up on Tiny Engines, because we got an email from Tiny Engines like the next day. We had like two songs up on Bandcamp and they were like, hey, do you have more than that? And we were like, yeah, we have a full record. And they were like, okay, cool.
And I just looked and saw that Dikembe is actually playing here in Phoenix in July.
Oh, yeah, they're doing that West Coast tour.
They're playing with Potty Mouth and Pool Kids.
Hey, Potty Mouth are good.
So I was actually thinking about going to that.
That Potty Mouth record's good. It's like a, it feels like a 90s, like, Garbage or Hole style record, but like punk, if that makes sense.
The new Pool Kids record is surprisingly good, too.
I haven't listened to that, but it's been very hyped. Like, I've seen it listed in a lot of places. So I guess I should give that a listen.
Yeah, that's Skeletal Lightning's doing that one.
Oh, okay.
I'll put that one on my calendar.
Yeah.
I might actually go to that. But
if tell not, them it's
yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try and go see him at Fest, at least, for sure. Well, unless you have anything to add, would we want to give it our scores?
Oh, yeah. I'll let you guys go first on this one.
Okay. I'd give it a 3.75. I liked it. I liked it a lot. It didn't quite cross over into the 4.0 range for me, but I enjoyed the record, and I think I would like to see them live, but I don't know that I'm going to come back to this album too often. I mean, it's just not a sound that I go to very often anymore. I kind of got worn out with the emo revival of the early 2010s, and yeah. By 2014, 2015, I was pretty much done with it. But yeah, I'd say 3.75.
I'd put it in maybe, yeah, I'd say about 3.75 too for me. I am interested enough to listen to what came after and see how this evolution in their sound progressed. So I'll probably give their next record a listen and see how I feel. They might be a band that slides back into rotation for me. I'm not sure, but
I did 4.25. Mm. A lot of that is like just from like being there and watching it at the time. Like, I'd say of all their records, like, I'm not necessarily an active record listener. I put records on and I do stuff, and I like to have like background music happen. Yeah. And this is a record that I put on more than like Broad Shoulders.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, listening to it, it's like, oh yeah, like I like this riff. This is good. This is great. So that's for me. That's what I'm at.
Yeah. Well, cool. Awesome. All right. Now let's get into, I can't wait to see what people say about this record. We got for our EP, we got number 157, and it is Reviver and Bicker and Breathe. We're gonna miss it. Quick little details. This was released on Rumbletown Records in the United States, which I believe is their own label.
It is.
And yes. Yo-Yo Records in Europe, which every time Reviver puts out a record, it comes out in Europe on Yo-Yo before it ever comes out here. It's very frustrating. But and Dead Broke Records did the cassette for this one as well. And the personnel on this album is Maddie Jo Canino and Erica Freyes on guitar and vocals, Chris Bauermeister on bass, and Kevin Rainsberry on drums. And the album was recorded by Phil Douglas. So a lot of those names should be very familiar to a lot of people. Let's start with Maddie. Maddie was in Latterman, Tender Defender, and Shorebirds, and I'm sure way more that I can't even think of. Chris, of course, was in Jawbreaker and Shorebirds with Maddie. And I want to say Erica was in that band's Hooky and Glue. So if anybody was listening to the Rumbletown Records back then, you probably downloaded those for free. And Phil is, of course, in Iron Sheik and was in Latterman and Tender Defender with Maddie. So that's the basics. Reviver's a little bit of a supergroup.
Have they always been, though?
Well, okay. This is interesting. Would you consider Was Letterman a big deal when they were active?
No, but they became a big deal.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely. But did Letterman become a big deal because Iron Sheik and Reviver got big?
No, or... I feel like Letterman had that revival like maybe a little before they started.
Right. Yeah. They. I remember people talking about Letterman before Iron Sheik and Reviver were a thing.
Yeah, I remember Iron Sheik and. I remember Iron Sheik and Reviver being introduced to me as members of Letterman, yeah. Which I, at that point I had probably only been listening to Letterman for like a couple months, but it yeah. was, there was still, I knew about Letterman before I knew about those bands. So
yeah, makes sense. All right. All right. What's everybody's thoughts on this EP? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Why not? It's a Reviver record. It sounds like a Reviver record. It is. That's what it is.
Yep, that is my thoughts exactly.
I hate to say that because like when they started that the first LP came out in like 2010, and I liked it. I bought it right away. I did trades with Rumbletown. Like had their stuff in the distro. At the time, I was like really excited because it was all of the really DIY political side of Letterman in one band. You know right. what I mean?
It was like, because everyone talks about when Letterman broke up, they were like, they were always upset that no one got what the band was about.
Right.
And it like turns out all those songs were about, you know, sexism and feminism and gender, you know, roles and stuff like that. And everybody else thought they were just about community.
Right.
But Reviver, it was like, no, this is the message and you're going to get it like immediately.
And I was psyched. Yeah. I was so into it. Like, I loved the sound. I was like, this is great. It's awesome. And then they just kept putting out the same record. I don't know. It's good. I listened to it this morning. Like, it's fine. Yeah.
It is. It's very difficult to... You could play a song from any one of their albums, and you would have a hard time remembering which one it was, I think.
Right. Like, the only thing that stuck out to me was there were two songs that had more of a country twang, if you will, like in the guitar. But which that's ones? Like... it was... hang on. It was... the middle two. Shit, I gotta pull them up. Hang on. There we go.
In Waves and the Sound.
Yes. Those yes. Two? In Waves and the Sound had like a twang in one of the guitars that gave it like almost an alt country vibe. And that even wasn't in the entire song. It was right. like in parts of the song. But that's just me listening with like an extremely like sensitive ear. I'm about to talk about this record.
What
can I talk about other than the fact it sounds like a Reviver record?
You know, like looking at my notes, everything I wrote down for it is purely based on my experience with the band and not so much what this EP sounds like, because it just sounds the same. Like it sounds like every other Reviver record. Dylan, we didn't get your take on it. What do you think?
I started listening. I put it on this morning and I'm looking at the track listing right now. And did you realize that the first song is 4.5 minutes long?
So when I was listening to that song, 20 Below, I thought it had changed to another song.
Uh-huh.
I was like, and then I looked down and it still said 20 Below. And I was like, oh, they have a really long bridge and then like an outro that doesn't even sound like the rest of the song. Like, yeah. I was just surprised that it was one song and not two separate songs.
So when I put it on this morning, I was like, oh yeah, I love this. And then like the second song played, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. I remember this chorus. It was really memorable, catchy.
I thought the second Reviver song was the best.
Goodbye. And then I just kind of lost focus. Like it just kind of was like, and then it ended. I was like, oh, I thought I liked this EP more than I did.
No, it's like, turns out you just like two songes.
Yeah.
I do and think
it makes
goodbye.
Me want to revisit their earlier stuff and see how quickly I stop paying attention.
So when Reviver, yeah, you were talking about when Reviver was new, it was exciting. Like, I saw them live a bunch of times. I was like, this is awesome. When that LP came out, I was stoked. I saw them on that first LP tour and at like a house show in Asheville, and it was fucking rad. It was like in the living room of somebody's house, and it was so cool, and I bought the record there. And then the second album came out, and it sounded exactly the same. And I listened to it. I listened to it a lot. The summer was 2013. Maybe it was the summer. Maybe it was the fall. The Beauty Between came out, and I listened to that album and Off With Their Heads Home. Back and forth. I would switch back and forth between those two albums. I listened to those albums so much that I proceeded to not like those albums anymore. And even retroactively not like the bands as much as I used to. And those are also the last full lengths that both of those bands have released.
Yes.
I didn't listen to Beauty and I didn't listen to the Beauty Between nearly as much as you did. I do remember listening to that album when it came out and being disappointed in it, though, and just getting kind of bored with it.
So they didn't change their sound, and then they played forever on those same songs. And I saw them live so many times playing the same songs. And it was like, yeah, okay, they're cool. I almost feel like I would have liked those songs better, and even these songs by extension, more if they'd broken up. Does that make sense?
I wonder, as like purely speculation, if like a lot of this is caused by the fact that they were almost nonstop touring at that time.
Yeah.
Like, they were touring, people were responding well, they were like, cool, we'll play songs like this because people like them, and then they just kept going.
Yeah. And,
I mean, even if you look at their discography, they did like, what, a 2-song 7-inch in 2017, and that's the last music they've released.
Yeah, and I remember those two songs, I'm going, hey, it sounds like Reviver.
Exactly, and like, did they release those because they felt like they needed to? Because they still play shows.
They play Fest almost every year, except this year, interestingly. This is like the first year that Reviver or Iron Sheik are not playing, and it's been a long time.
Yeah.
But at least with like Iron Sheik, they started around the same time, and they spaced their releases out more. They changed their sound a little.
A little, but you can hear the evolution.
Yeah, you can. I couldn't hear a difference in this EP and LP. Like, I couldn't tell. And then they play Fest every year, and I watch them every year, and I go, "Yep, same songs."
Yep.
And then they'll play in the sunlight and on the outdoor stage, and it's even weirder. And and it sucks because I almost feel like they could have been more important later. At least as far as their unique social commentary that they had.
I agree, but I also feel like the stuff they're talking about was not necessarily the time wasn't necessarily important.
True.
Like, I feel like the stuff they talk about like needed to be talked about at all times.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking about it when most bands weren't.
Yeah. Exactly. They were also talking about it at a time that now we know there were a lot of bands that were probably perpetuating this.
Yeah.
You know, thanks to, stuff coming out later, people coming forward, you find that they started this conversation at a time that probably it needed to be talked about, but then no one was. And now that people are, their sound is old.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's tough.
Part of me wonders if they're like laying low because they know it's like, well, our sound was a little played out. But if we wait long enough, maybe we can be re-embraced if we come out with a new album. I don't know. I feel like Erica's released a few solo records, and they're mostly acoustic albums, aren't they?
Yeah, she normally plays, what's that spot in Fest that has like Mikey Ergs plays every year?
Yeah, the CMC?
Yeah. She normally plays that, I think.
And, I've always liked Erica, her songs the most out of Reviver's discography.
I think I gravitate towards her voice more.
Yeah, I do too.
I think she has just a little more character to her voice, and it cuts through, whereas Maddie's voice kind of really blends in with the guitars. And it's the same problem with Letterman.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I feel like her voice is not, it's not new, obviously.
Yeah, because Maddie, you know, there's like 4 Letterman albums or 3 full length and like a EP of some sort. And then there's the Shorebirds records and the EP. And then there's Tender Defender. Like, we have plenty of Maddie's songs. But Erica, we only have these Reviver records. I mean, those Hooky and Glue EPs, but I don't know that anybody else is really listening to those. And then her solo records. So, like, she doesn't, we don't have as many of her albums, so it always feels a little more special whenever she sings Reviver songs.
It's one of those things where I don't need to keep buying their records.
Yeah.
Will I see them? Sure. If they're playing around and whatever, yeah, why not? I still like their music.
Yeah.
And, like, I hate to say that because I'm someone that runs a record label. So I hate to be like, I would buy their records. But, like, they're not reinventing the wheel.
No. I feel like they needed to. I think this EP probably would have been the one that they needed to do it the most.
Sure.
And then maybe that's why they haven't, I don't know, maybe they're stuck. Maybe they don't know what to do next.
Reviver is one of those bands that they give me a lot of, it's difficult to criticize them because on the, like, I like their sound.
Mm-hmm.
I always like it when I hear it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I don't need them to drastically change anything.
No.
But at the same time, like, yeah, it needs something, just a little something.
Well, I always look at Iron Sheik, and yes, their sound has stayed the same, but Paul, like you said, there is an evolution there, though. You can hear new things in Iron Sheik albums, even though I saw a lot of criticism on that last Iron Sheik record, that they were like, it just sounds just like all the others. And I don't know, I listened to them back to back, and I hear a difference in the records.
I mean, even with, like those two records, like the two most recent ones, there's a major difference in production, too.
Yeah.
So, like, while the music maybe hasn't evolved quite as much as since, like, their first record, it's still, like, the records sound different.
Yeah. I mean, because you still have Mikey and Phil, you know, playing Mikey and Phil's songs. You know,
right.
most of Mikey's bands all sound the same. I mean, the difference is the vocalists usually, but also Rob passed away, so he's not on the newest album. Was he on the second, The Constant?
He was only on the first album.
I think he was only on the first one, yeah.
So, you know, that's a different guitarist. You know, they add the dude from Broadcaster to the band, so that gives that last album a different sound. And it's weird, because even Reviver has had other people on the records, and even live, they have different. Because, like, Chris didn't tour with Reviver, right?
No.
I don't even think Chris was in the band the whole time. Like, if you go to their Bandcamp, I think it just says on this recording next to Chris.
Yeah. So, yeah, because I distinctly remember, like, a female bass player every time I saw them.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess Chris didn't tour. He just helped out. Is he just on this one, or is he on any others?
That is a good question.
See, when I was writing down the personnel on this album, I was surprised to see Chris even listed, because I just mainly connected him to Shorebirds.
Yeah, the other, at least on their Bandcamp, the other releases don't say. That's the only one where I see.
He's definitely not on The Beauty Between.
Okay. So I'm wondering if they needed somebody to fill in on bass, and of course you're going to ask Chris Bauermeister.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
I mean, you'd be dumb not to, especially if you're already friends with him.
Weirdly enough, Chris's bass playing doesn't stand out to me at all on this record.
No, I didn't really notice it that strongly. I mean, I definitely noticed Erica and Maddie's guitar playing more and their voices.
And Chris, to me, has a pretty distinctive bass playing style. Yeah. So it's weird that he doesn't stand out. But
I'm wondering if he was just playing playing Reviver songs.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it could be one of those things where would Maddie and maybe Erica have written those bass lines and just, but then you'd think they would just record them themselves. So I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like you don't need him to play on the record if he's not going to just like listen to the songs and come up with the bass parts himself.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Interesting. Well, unless anyone has anything else to say, what should we rate it?
You guys want to go?
I'll go. I give it a 3.5. Like, I listen to it and I go, I like these songs. And if in a vacuum, I'd give it a 3.5. Maybe in the greater context of the band's discography, maybe a 3.25, 3.0. Yeah. I don't dislike it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to give it a 3.75 just because when you put it on, you get that immediate pop of like, yes, I like this sound and I like this energy level.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing a 3.5 because like if I had never heard Reviver before and I listened to this record, I'd probably really like it.
Yeah.
You know, like if somebody was just like, oh, hey, check out this band.
Yeah.
It's a sound I like. The songs are good. They're not bad songs. You know, but because it's Reviver and because of their evolution as a band or lack thereof, I'm giving it a 3.5.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my thinking. And I guess it's fair, right? We're not being mean, right?
I mean, same thing. It's like not a bad record. We've all three of us said that. It's just like it's a Reviver record.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, this is always a weird. It's so weird. So in punk rock, there's this attitude of like, we have to lift each other up and we have to like be supportive of our scene. And but then we'll say stuff about records and they're not the most glowing. And then I feel kind of bad. I was like, am I supposed to be criticizing punk rock?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like,
I mean, punk criticizes people, everything else.
So. Yeah. No, yeah. Well, and people were so like, oh, we lost Maximum Rock and Roll. And it's like, they shit on everything.
That's true.
They so, did.
Man, I have a love-hate relationship with Maximum Rock and Roll. Like, I carry them in the web store. I'm happy they existed because, like, I think print media and physical media in general is, like, important. But, like, if you weren't, like, a specific subsection of punk, like, my favorite, like, analogy for this is the review for the They and the Children CD I put out, okay, which was like Primo, they're doing a reunion show with Jerome's Dream for the Connecticut Jerome's Dream show. Anyway, the review was, I put this CD in my CD player in my car, 3 seconds later I ejected it and threw it out the window. Like, period, end of review. Like, that was it. That was all it was. And I just thought that was very funny.
I hope you printed that out and included it on the label of the CD or the record. Or
it's your pull quote.
Yeah.
That's the one.
That's like the greatest pull quote for any label. But yeah, that shows you like that's what Maximum Rock and Roll is. And it was important, but they hated everything unless it fit this very narrow window of what punk was.
Once in a while, you'd get a review, or I'd get a review that like was shitting on the record, but then would mention bands that sounded like as if to shit on those bands as well. And I'd be like, I'd be like, no, this is okay, because somebody reading this might be like, oh, I like that band, I'll check this out.
Yeah,
that's true. A negative review, but like, you know,
if that person's like, hey, I like that band, then yeah, maybe I'll give this one a listen.
Yeah, this reviewer is full of shit.
I'm pretty sure like the Sea of Storms review was negative, but like compared them to Quicksand or something like that, and I was like, oh, I'll take that, that's all right.
Also, I don't feel like that's a very accurate comparison.
No, me either. But someone who likes Quicksand that listens to them might also like them, maybe.
Maybe I could see maybe. Yeah. There's a better chance than not, right. I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Art is subjective, and it's totally up to each person's individual take. And so I don't know. It's a weird, like, I like talking about music, and I like talking about what I like and don't like, and I don't like being negative just for the sake of being negative.
Sure.
So I'm also not going to lie and say I love that Hot Water Music record when I didn't.
No, man, I'm not going to lie. I love Hot Water Music. Like, one of the bands that introduced me to, like, I saw them in, like, 99, and it, like, sort of changed a bunch of shit that I was listening to. I have not listened to that record that came out, like, a year ago. Didn't even bother. Haven't even gave it a listen.
Yeah, and I guess that's what most people do whenever it's a band they don't like or care about anymore. They just don't listen to it. And we're the dummies who actually suggest ourselves to it. Subject ourselves, good lord, to it.
You know, I know, like, personally, I think that's what makes this an interesting podcast. Is, like, you guys just basically, also based on age, like, you're covering years that, like, you wouldn't necessarily have listened to at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, that's interesting. It's, like, what are these kids who have never, ever heard this band ever? Like, Flipper. Yeah, perfect example, man. I also am not a huge Flipper fan, but, like, at the time, it was, like, you know, oh, wow, they're doing things that no one else is really doing. That doesn't make it great. But, you know,
I can respect what a band is doing and not like it at the same time.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's this show, I guess. I guess I have to look at a band's intention. I mean, we talked about this on the episode that hasn't come out yet. We covered another art punk band, which we got to stop doing that. but I think we specifically say, like, I can respect art punk without having to enjoy listening to it. So
supposed to listen to the notes she's not playing.
Yeah.
I can do that at home.
You know, I mean, like, as I mentioned before, being in Providence, where, like, noise is a big thing, and like RISD art kids, like, get into music, there's a lot of bands here that I would never buy their record. Man, do they sometimes put on a show, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I feel like a lot of stuff within that art punk scene is like that. Like, I bet if I was there, I would be, like, blown away. But yeah. I do not want to listen to it at home.
Yeah.
Well, So it's so funny. I almost, when people, like, tag the bands in the episodes we've talked about, I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. Stop. I don't want, even though we tag them specifically using a hashtag, we're not really adding the bands, so it's a little different. It's not like I'm saying, hey, look at me, you know. I don't know. Man, it's weird.
Did I mess up this morning with my Instagram post then?
Well, I didn't know how the episode was gonna go, so I didn't know what our take was gonna wind up being. I think we're okay. They may listen to it and go, I don't get it. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. This is an interesting show, because we try to...
If you're a Reviver lifer.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. But there are Reviver lifers,
too. Give me your opinion. I'm curious to see how many people would say they'll always support that band, but they're not always thrilled with each new release.
And, like, that's the difference, though, is, like, I fully support the band, what they stand for. Like, I like their music. But, like, I'm kind of all set with owning the new record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's I guess that you could say that about a majority of the bands that we've ever covered on the show is I respect it for the most part. There's a handful of bands I don't respect, like the Murder Dolls. But even then, I think I said some positive things about that, as saying, didn't like Joey Jordison play everything on that record? I was like, well, he played everything. That's kind of neat.
And I mean, honestly, like I'll say, having never listened to that band other than the few clips you guys played on the show, it was a perfect example, of the psychobilly that was happening at the time.
Yeah.
It sounded just like other bands that were happening. Like their lyrics are horrible and their like stance of stuff is horrible, but music, I was just like, oh yeah, right. I've seen this band before. Like not this band, but like a band very similar.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we shouldn't get too like introspective and like our own thing. It sounds like we're...
What is music criticism?
Did y'all see that tweet? There was like a tweet from Lizzo? Was that her name? That's like a rapper or like an R&B singer. I haven't listened to her music to know for sure. But I think she tweeted something along the lines of, any music critic who's never made music should not be allowed to critique it, or something along those lines. I'm totally paraphrasing that.
I've heard that take from so many different people.
Yeah.
Different, and it's usually the kind of I always want to say it's the kind of artist who lacks self-awareness, or maybe not self-awareness isn't the word. It's usually the kind of artist that thinks this shit is genius, like about everything they make.
Yeah.
It's the kind of people that just can't take criticism.
Yeah. I don't know. I've been in bands. I don't think that the bands I were in were especially good. So it's fine. Nobody's good. I'm trying to bring everybody down a peg. Punk rock is not about rock star mentalities. Anyway, next week we are doing the year 1989. And we got number 104 on the album charts, and it is Shudder to Think, Curses, Spells, Voodoos, and Mooses. And our EP is number 128, and it is Luna Chicks. And the Luna Chicks self-titled EP are alternately known as the Sugar Love EP, for people at home who are playing along. Paul, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure.
What do you want to plug?
Tor Johnson Records. You can find it everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, our own .com. Just had two cassettes come out, a discography from a band that was on our very, very first release, which was a Gorilla Biscuits tribute. And then we just did an EP from a local sludge band, Sidorak, which is actually, I'm in that band.
Is that a Marvel Comics reference there?
It sure is. Yeah, we get kind of nerdy. Lots of songs about D&D and Warhammer and comic books. And earlier this year, we put out the Aneurysm LP. And then coming soon, which this will be the first place I officially say anything, I will be doing the third Sneeze record.
Oh, nice. That band was pretty hype.
Yeah.
I remember listening to their, like, one of the earliest things they did. And I was like, man, this band's pretty cool. I like this.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's we're looking at probably early fall. It just went off to the plant, so something around that line. I think they're doing a West Coast around the same time frame, so it should be fun.
That is very cool. Well, you heard it here first. Unless you decide to post it between now and then. Yeah. Awesome, then.
Those pre-orders.
Yeah. We'll make sure to include links to all of your stuff, your social medias and your website and all that. And do not buy Tor Johnson Records on Interpunk.
Yeah. Right. Supposedly those are supposed to be shipping back to me.
Really?
Like that whole company is a mess. But supposedly I put in the request, so we'll see if I ever get my records back.
I'm going to say you're not.
I'm aware. I mean, like, I didn't get the, like, $50 check they were supposed to mail me, like, a year ago. So, you know.
Speaking of Interpunk, they've been stringing Grant along for months now.
Yeah.
He emails him that label or that shop every single day trying to get his money back. And then they'll say, we just got him in. We just got him in. We'll have it out to you. We'll give you that tracking by Monday. And then Monday will come and he says, where's that tracking? And then he'll send another email every single day and nothing ever comes from that. That place is a mess. I don't understand.
Yeah. You know, initially I put stuff in there just as like it's somewhere else to sell stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, like 10 years ago, they were pretty good about paying people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's a mess.
Yeah. The thing that bums me out the most about them is, yes, they steal from people. Yes, the owner is a fucking Trump supporter. But the fact that labels like Hopeless will do exclusive colors through them. And like Alkaline Trio colors and Masked Intruder colors. It's like, hey, they're not paying people and they're not shipping stuff. So please stop working with them. Like, yeah. Politics aside, it's just bad business. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll stop lending them the credibility of like, oh, they're working with these big bands, you know, and then people aren't getting the stuff.
Yeah.
That they bought. So
I wonder how much of that is actually like Hopeless or if like they just have some deal with like a broker that they get exclusive colors. Like if Hopeless has a huge distributor that they go through, like a sole distributor, like Interpunk could just have a deal with that distributor and the distributor could be like, oh, hey, we need 100 on this color. And they'd be like, oh, all right, cool.
That's true. I wonder if that is the case. I mean, I said it before. I got Asian Man Records to make sure his stuff is no longer sold on Interpunk. So I can retire from punk. I think I've done my due diligence. And
that's because Mike Park's the man.
Yes. Did you guys see the sad news about his hearing?
Oh, yeah.
He's got severe tinnitus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not going to be able to play these Ogikubo Station tours. And he's trying to figure out a way to make sure he can still record music in the future, but sounds like he may not be able to tour in the future, which is really sad because I never got to see any Mike Park band live.
Well, hopefully it's ends up being the same thing as Jeff Farina from Karate, where he broke up Karate because his hearing was so bad that he couldn't like perform with them anymore. And so he put out a bunch of solo records and eventually his hearing got better and he started Glory Tellers and then did Exit Verse. And so hopefully Mike Park just needs some time off.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, the Mission of Burma dude, like he had the same issue and he wound up playing shows with those giant like noise canceling headphones on.
Yeah,
right.
And then they got back together later. So, I mean, it's possible that they, you know, can heal from it. So hopefully he can because Mike Park is the best. And
Mike Park, if you're listening, feel better, buddy.
Yeah, I doubt it, but
I know.
never know. Awesome. Well, this was a lot of fun, and man, we'd love to have you back on in the future too.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye out for that, and unless though, you know, our numbers are really bad on this episode, then it's not really for our,
obviously my fault.
Well, what do we do to end the show?
We just are pretty inconsistent.
We'll probably have some dumb. Hey, we should use that a Dikembe Mutombo clip from those Geico commercials.
So basically, him just going like, "No, no, no."
Yeah, nice. We'll put that in.
Perfect.
Not in my house.